This past holiday season, many adults and kids found electronics gifts under the tree. Smartphones, video games, and all manner of computers were on millions of Christmas lists. And it seems that the more of these gadgets we receive, the less time we spend talking face-to-face. Have we become a world where texting is preferable to talking? Have our kids abandoned outdoor play for online games? And are we shackled to our work lives because we can't turn off the phone?
I'm all for saying enough. The overload of interruptions, detours, distractions is really pulling us away from what matters to us most.
That's Anne Catherine, a therapist and author of the book Boundaries in an Overconnected World.
I think each person decides that for themselves. What is the most important aspect of your own life? And if you just think 5 minutes about it, how much time has been pulled from that by all of your devices?
Catherine's worried that young people who are constantly texting or tweeting won't develop communication skills they'll need throughout their lives.
Young people are no longer, and I'm not just talking about kids, I'm talking about people in their 20s and even early 30s, are no longer primarily communicating or interacting face-to-face. So they are not getting lots of skills that you get through direct interaction, and these skills are very important for establishing intimacy and a good foundation for a marriage later on. So they're going to go into dating, courting, marrying without that bag of skills.
Rob Weiss says that technology is here to stay, and we need to get used to it. Weiss is also a therapist and author of the book Closer Together, Further Apart: The Effect of Technology and the Internet on Parenting, Work, and Relationships.
I think what's really happening is that we're seeing a turn of the evolutionary wheel. Ever since we started to be able to be adult human beings putting these technologies in the hands of two-year-olds, we're literally the first generation to ever witness human evolution in real time. Because when you put those devices in the hands of a two-year-old, their brain starts evolving very differently than yours or mine did because of all of that digital interaction. I grew up playing outside. These kids, you know, my nieces and nephews grew up playing constantly with these digital machines. And what I know about that is that they're going to be thinking differently. They're going to be relating differently. They're going to be different people than we are. And I think that train has already left the station.
Weiss says that technology use, and often attitude, is generational.
Well, for one thing, I think older people, and I mean anybody over 30, really needs to take a really good look at their beliefs about technology. You know, I hear so much in the media from my peers, meaning those professionals who are in the helping professions and the research field who are working or beginning work with people who are, you know, basically digital natives who grew up with computers. And, you know, we're in the very earliest stages of seeing whether this is truly even problematic. We don't know what the outcome is, but I do see a lot of older people being fearful of how much time, and parents in particular, being fearful of how much time kids are spending on their devices, what they're doing on their devices, what the devices are doing to them. I see a lot of fear. That's the part that I'm most concerned about, is the fear that older people are expressing toward what younger people are doing.
Americans over the age of 30 or so get on and get off their smartphones or computers. For younger people, technology is an appendage, an extension of themselves, and pretty much second nature.
I really don't think a lot of older people really understand the social media world. You know, a lot of us got through the digital age of the 1990s, the first wave, websites. We learned to go on eBay, we learned to set up websites, we learned to communicate by email, and that really didn't produce much of a generational divide because everyone kind of jumped on the bandwagon. But when social media came along, you know, which is really just about 5 or 6 years ago, I saw a lot of my peers in their 40s and 50s say, well, what do I need to go on Twitter for to find out that Mary's getting 25 cents off at Safeway on butter? And they didn't really get, and still don't get, that it's a whole way of living. It's a world. It's an engagement on multiple levels with people in multiple environments. And that way of moving from one world to another, it's not just like getting on the computer or getting online. It becomes a part of your life. And younger people will say that they know someone thoroughly even though they've never met them.
That being said, should there be no boundaries for technology use? Are we all just going to have to get used to cell phones interrupting our dinners and commutes? Will we have to be available to our offices, schools, and friends 24/7? Catherine says that no boundaries can drive us crazy and has some suggestions to get us offline so we can enjoy life without technological intrusions.
It depends a bit on which of the devices is most intrusive or time-consuming for you, the one that pulls you away the most. For example, If you absolutely have to go online after you get home, set a timer. If there's a reason you need to check Facebook, set a timer. Decide in advance how much time you want to give that. And then, when the timer rings, leave. Get up, walk out. If you don't have to be online when you get home, don't turn it on. Leave your computer off. Turn off your phone. Tell your family, you know, I want to spend time with you. Would you turn off your devices? How about we play our favorite game? Or I'd really like to talk about that last game. What do you think about the quarterback? Things like that, so that you are pulling yourself back into your real life rather than being pulled out of it.
Weiss says it's up to parents to make rules for their children, even if technology has become their favored means of communicating.
You don't let a child run across the street who's 6 years old without holding her hand and looking both ways. And I would not let my kid be online unless they'd done their homework. I wouldn't let them interact with their devices unless we had talked about the day. No matter how positive I might wax about technology and the evolution that we're experiencing in our culture and in our race, that doesn't mean that parents don't need to respect the basic boundaries of, sorry, kid, you got to put that down until you get this done. And that's a struggle parents have been in with their kids since we first started turning on lights.
Some children are more vulnerable than others and become obsessed with online gaming or end up on websites where predators exploit them. Weiss says that kids with problems are nothing new. It's just that technology gives them different outlets to turn to in times of stress or depression.
That is where I feel like we do need to look at this differently. But remember, there have always been vulnerable children. And there have always been children who have had trauma, who have been neglected, who grew up with abuse or problems with their early childhood experiences. And they've had problems in life. You know, they may have had problems with drugs. They may have had problems with their relationships. They may have had problems with trying to get through school. But those kids have always been around. The challenge now is that we have these new devices that are distracting them. That's going to mean that this will become the source of their problem. So the kids who might have had a drug addiction, who might have ended up on the streets or whatever, maybe now they're ending up losing themselves in gaming or running around online with people they shouldn't be. And of course we need to worry about those children, but we've always needed to worry about those children. And again, my fear is more about sort of generalizing and saying all kids are going to end up X, Y, Z, rather than saying, you know, we've always had vulnerable kids, and with vulnerable kids, you need to watch where they're going online, you need to track them. They may not be being honest with you, so you may need to filter their devices. Of course, you need to take steps to keep your kids safe, but it's really about, you know, do you trust your child? Who is your child? Most kids are fairly healthy. Most kids will find their devices somewhat two-dimensional. They will love them, but they will also want to connect with people. And let's not forget, and I think this is the most important part, is that I know that when an older person, meaning over 30, looks at a kid playing with a device or a whole bunch of kids playing with devices and they say, oh my God, those kids, you know, that's all they do today. They're so addicted to their devices. You know, and I sit back as a social worker and I say, what are they doing with their devices? They're connecting.
Just like their parents who were on the phone with their friends right after they left them at school, kids today are anxious to talk to their peers about every tiny development in their lives and the lives of their favorite celebrities and sports heroes. Weiss says it's just something that teenagers do and have done for generations.
I think I spent half my teen years on the telephone. You know, when I wasn't at school, my dad would just, you know, be not so happy with me about the phone bills I'd run up talking to friends when I wasn't at school because, you know, when you're a teenager, that's what you want to do. You want to connect with your friends. So now we have devices where kids can do that 24/7, and some kids will get lost in that experience and will struggle with it. We've always had kids who get lost and struggle. And then I think most of our kids are going to be just fine, in fact, maybe even better, because they are more interconnected than we ever were.
Still, parents have to be more careful about kids exchanging information online than their parents did when the phone was the major mode of teenage communication. Catherine says that a surprising number of kids receive emails and propositions that could spell danger.
Approximately 1 in 7 children were sexually solicited in a study in the first decade. 75% of solicitors asked to meet the youth in person, 34% called them on the phone, and 18% came to their homes. Parents surveyed said that they knew their child would come to them, but in fact, more than half of the kids did not go to their parents when they were disturbed.
She says there are apps that parents can use to prevent online solicitations. They can also try other strategies, such as putting the computer in a central location in the home and helping kids with the privacy settings on social media pages. She also says that families should make rules about what no one in the family is allowed to share online.
On Facebook, it'd be a good idea not to take a video of all your Christmas presents and say, look at all I got. Look what my dad gave me, or look what my husband gave me. And then 2 or 3 days later say, oh, I'm so excited. We're leaving on our trip to Florida. Now, anybody who wants to has an inventory of what's in your home and that you'll be gone probably 1 or 2 weeks and leaving that nice, newly furnished with attractive treasures home unguarded. When you take pictures of your children, turn off location settings. Let's say you send a digital picture of your adorable daughter to your mother, her grandmother. Her grandmother's so proud. And grandmothers are now online and on Facebook. And so grandmother posts this adorable picture online. And embedded in the picture are the location settings. Well, now anybody who wants to could find out where that child hangs out and maybe even lives. If she's in a living room with a Christmas tree in the back now, they have her actual physical address.
Again, privacy settings and common sense can help prevent family information from falling into the wrong hands. Technology, as intrusive as it's become, has a real upside for future and present generations. Weiss says it's created a way to clear out our brains of trivial information so we have more room for the important stuff.
I don't have to remember people's phone numbers. I don't have to remember their addresses. I don't have to remember where I put things. You know, everything is all in this one little neat device, and I'm so grateful. It provides me with so much more, I tell myself, more brain space to do other things. I mean, honestly, I know 2 phone numbers now. I think I grew up knowing a whole bunch. So maybe that part of my brain is not going to be as important in the brains of younger people, remembering numbers. You know, maybe it'll be something else that'll be important because they're living in a different world.
You can read all about relationships and technology in Rob Weiss's book, Closer Together, Further Apart, available in stores and online. For information on drawing boundaries with technology, for young and old alike, pick up Anne Catherine's book, Boundaries in an Overconnected World. She also invites listeners to her site at Anne with an E, Catherine with a K, .org. And you can find out more about all of our guests on our site at viewpointsonline.net. I'm Gary Price.